Okay, here's how it sits at the moment. We're on track for child mortality, preschool enrolment, and year 12 attainment, as it happens. Little progress, though, on life expectancy, reading, writing, and numeracy, and we're slipping in employment. That's the gist of the Prime Minister Tony Abbott's first progress report on closing the gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous levels of health, education and employment. The PM, who I should point out is a former Shadow Minister for Indigenous Affairs, also set a new target, specifically on school attendance.
Right around our country, it should be possible to be proudly Aboriginal and a full participant in modern Australia. That doesn't just mean access to a good education in cities, towns and remote settlements. It means actually going to school. So, Madam Speaker, I propose to add a new target to our existing Closing the Gap targets, namely to end the gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous school attendance within 5 years.
Yeah. Joining me now is Nigel Scullion, Senator for the Northern Territory and Minister for Indigenous Affairs. Minister, thank you very much for joining us. How are we going to end this gap in 5 years?
Well, we've got to do the same pretty much as what we've been doing since the start of this term, pretty much with a few short weeks to implement. On day one of the first term this year, there's 420 more students in school in 30 schools that we're doing than day one of the first term last year. And sadly, we had a cyclone hit Palm Island. And so the fact that 100-odd kids in Palm Island didn't get to school is included in that statistic. But it's the way we're going about it is, I think, a fresh approach in that we're using community members. This is a community-driven initiative, not an initiative necessarily driven by me. I've facilitated it. But this is what the community has said that they want to do.
All right, I'll come back to the community-driven stuff in a moment, actually, because I think that's very interesting. But the 5 years is also an interesting number. Why choose that number of years?
I have no idea why the boss chose that number, but it's a number that's within my reach, and he believes it's within his reach. So it's not something in 20 years' time or 2020. He's going to be accountable for that. He hopes to be accountable for that.
I was going to say, you might be getting ahead of yourself there.
Well, I mean, I think it's quite reasonable to say within 5 years. What are we going to do? Say Aboriginal and Islander Australians should maybe get the same access to education in 10 years' time?
No, I think it's interesting.
I think 5 years is an important figure. It's within our scope and our responsibility.
Well, we actually put it on to Facebook and we've been getting comments and mixed responses. Some are actually suggesting that the 5 years is putting it too far into the future, that there should be a practical completion date of as little as 12 months, according to one person who's talking on Facebook. I mean, how do we make a realistic assessment about this?
Well, it's about realistically to get like probably half the schools that are predominantly Aboriginal and Islander people attending those schools aren't at 50%. They're not at 45%. So in 5 years, that is something that I think is important to go and do that in 5 years. But as I've also indicated today, we don't have to wait 5 years to understand the results. So the results won't even be, we don't have to wait till the closing the gap next year to talk about the results and get into a self-flagellation exercise or otherwise. I'll be looking at this every week. And I have to sign off with a few of the jurisdictions, but at the end of the day, I'd like to make those public in far greater frequency than once a parliamentary term.
Could you help me out with something?
It's also very important that we have this information, Waleed, to guide us.
Absolutely.
If it's not working well, then we need to respond immediately. We don't need to respond in a year's time.
Absolutely, yeah. You need to keep on it constantly. I'm a bit confused, though, because we're apparently doing well when it comes to closing the gap on enrolment for preschool. We seem to be doing well when it comes to year 12 attainment, but we're not doing well on numeracy, reading and writing. Now, what's going on there? Doesn't that suggest it's not just about enrolment?
I'll just explain a couple of things to you. I'm a bit of a cynic when it comes to the three things that we say we're doing right. We're halving the gap in mortality rates. Sure, we're going okay. We've been doing okay in that since 98, and it doesn't seem to be anything we can do to stop it being okay and meeting the target. So it's not really a target anymore. That's happening as a consequence of a million other things in the health system. Halving the gap for Indigenous people, 20 to 24 year 12, well, you know, I have to say in the cities it's probably a lot better than that, and in the bush there's almost none. It's less than I can count on two hands. In terms of the enrolment for four-year-olds, just ensuring that the enrolment is there, I'm not sure what that's against, and I'll be checking that. What we want to move to is to ensure that people are attending. I mean, we know the enrolment. That's not a difficult and we're on track for that. It was actually supposed to be this year. Certainly we're on track for that. So we need to move to some practical initiatives of actually ensuring that all 4 years olds at school, because we know 0 to 5, the Australian Early Development Index, is just such an important measure. And we'll be ensuring that if you're going to have high scores and comparable scores with mainstream in the Australian Early Development Index, you need to have access to curricula like the Abecedarian curriculum. So we need to ensure that not only are people enrolled, people are attending, and what happens in class 0 to 5 is the world's best. So that's what we need to move to. Yes, we're on track. So I know I'm a bit cynical about those things. So we might be on track, but we've got a long way to go in all of those, in at least two of those initiatives. One's already going to get there, doesn't matter what we do.
You mentioned a couple of difficulties. What's actually getting in the way, though, of getting more kids to school?
Well, they are very complex. I mean, invariably, sadly, a number of these communities I've had a lot to do with, the kids have decided whether they go to school or not. Over the last decade or so, it's become pretty slack. Three decades ago, people tell me everybody went to school here. We're the consequences, the leadership you're talking to now. But as the generations have moved on, of course, kids are making their own mind if you go to school. 20% can't keep them away with a stick. 60% in the middle, if something cool's happening at school, I'll go. If it's not, I won't. 20%, probably a bit like me, you'll never get to school without some encouragement. But principally, if the parents are having problems getting their kids to school, people in the community are the ones who will know what those challenges are. They will have relationships with those parents. They will understand exactly what's happening in that house. And that's why they're going to be the best to be able to offer assistance.
Often those things are symptomatic of broader currents within communities and within culture and also socioeconomic factors. I wonder whether or not this focus on getting kids to school and really making that some kind of measurable thing that you're going to look at, and this determination to close the gap sits at odds with the decision that was made formally in December last year, when there were cuts to Indigenous legal aid to the tune of at least $9 million, which basically means, according to experts who are working on the ground there, that you're going to have higher rates of Indigenous incarceration, less access to justice, and therefore the idea of getting kids to school and the communities that support that is just going to be in collapse.
Well, can I just correct you? The original cut was $42 million. On reassessment, it was actually made down to $3 million. That is not in frontline legal aid. That is in the area of law reform and particular advocacy for legal aid. So everybody's had to have a haircut in that area. We have a debt that's going to approach $650 billion with that intervention. Everybody accepts they'll have to pay a part of it. So no, it's not $9 million, it's $3
million. It's $9 million over 3 years, I understand that.
No, $3 million a year, and it's not going to affect frontline services.
Well, you said that. When people who worked in Indigenous legal aid were asked about that, they thought that whole prospect of taking $9 million out and saying it wouldn't affect frontline services was just impossible.
Well, it's been calculated, the $3 million a year, is actually directly calculated off the area of advocacy and law reform. It's a specific budget line item. That's why it's been removed in that very forensic way. I was the one who championed to ensure that the $42 million wasn't calculated to do that.
There's been an adjustment.
I'm sorry, Wahid, everybody, you can't just say, look, Nigel's a bastard because we couldn't get it right in one area. We have a very careful approach to ensuring in a fair income way that no frontline services are affected, and they won't be.
I didn't say that about you. I want to be clear about that. But
it's just a self-reproach.
No, I understand. But I just think it's intriguing, because I understand the idea of everyone should get a haircut, but surely if there's such a focus on closing the gap, that's an area that should be exempt from having a haircut. That's the point. The point is that they have no hair.
But the cut doesn't affect incarceration. The cut doesn't affect frontline services and providing legal aid to Aboriginal people. Does not affect it at all.
Why the focus on education as opposed to health?
Well, it's not so much. I mean, we have, in closing the gap, there are a number of health attainments. Obviously, we have the closing life expectancy, mortality. They are obviously indicated. In terms of education, we know that there's a direct correlation between achievements in life, between health outcomes, and both education and employment. If you don't have a job, you're much more likely to be in the demographic of people who have systemic disease loads. You're much more likely to be in the area of disconnection from family, disconnection from community, sadly, disconnection from employment, education, and reconnection with the cycle of substance abuse, homelessness, and disconnection with your communities. We know that's the case. That's why there's a focus on measuring these particular outcomes. It doesn't mean that because these are the closing the gap targets, we suddenly ignore those minutiae of targets that we have to meet every day, whether it's the connection between ear, nose and throat presentations and education. If you can't hear what's being said in class, you don't do very well. So we have a sophisticated approach across quite a complex range of challenges.
Just finally, you've mentioned the idea of community-led initiatives, particularly in education, and a lot of people within Indigenous communities and activists are applauding that fact. But is that an admission that the approach of the intervention, which was criticised as being paternalistic and not being community-led and not involving enough consultation with the community, that has now been acknowledged as being misguided?
Look, every day is a lesson. I don't think it's an acknowledgement of something, and I don't want to be part of saying, listen, that was just a waste of time, because people speak to me on a daily basis whenever I'm in the communities, which is most of my life. They tell me that, well, thank heaven for the intervention. It's mostly women, but I can tell you it has some detractors. It has a lot of people that support it. This is an approach because I've spent some time in the wilderness, and my wilderness was, of course, being delightfully the Shadow Minister for Aboriginal and Islander Affairs. So I've considered these matters about how we should go from here. The community supports this. The community says this is the way forward. And I've undertaken to ensure that the fundamental premise of all of our actions in this area have to be from the ground up and have to come with the support of the communities, particularly in regional and remote Australia. It's sometimes difficult to say, I've got the support of community in Sydney. We're always going to have some people jump up and say, oh, we didn't like that and didn't like this. But fundamentally, particularly in regional and remote areas, the communities operate in a way that to get the right outcome, we've got to be properly engaged, respectfully engaged, and engaged in a way that gives us the outcomes that we all require.
Really interesting remarks. Might even signal a change in philosophy in the way that the country goes about this. So we'll see how it plays out. I do appreciate your frankness and your time, Nigel Scullion. Thank you so much.
No worries, Waleed. Lovely to talk to you, mate.
Northern Territory Senator Nigel Scullion, Federal Minister for Indigenous Affairs.